What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that has now completed the Madam Cravius trilogy, it's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP, available at your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he can also sound like any other human in existence if you let him lip sync. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Howdy, everybody. It's me, Christopher Walken.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, or whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. See, in order to do it like the movie, though, you just play Christopher Walken, and then you just move your lips. You know, you just all you gotta do is lip sync. That's all it takes, right there.
Yeah.
That movie, of course, is Kraven the Hunter, which came out this fine week as we are recording this. So we're gonna take a look at Kraven the Hunter, a Netflix movie that's been out a couple weeks called Emilia Perez. Actually, I'm not sure when it came out because I watched it like a month ago, but I know it's out now, at least on Netflix. So we'll take a look at that as our final artifact. We're going to do best ever hunting movies. And what we mean by that is movies that have a variation of the word hunt in the title. Mm-hmm. So not like Helen Hunt movies. No, it has to be in the title, not like Ethan Hunt.
Gotta redo my list.
It was all Hunter S. Thompson flicks.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to do that. And then, of course, we like to kick it off with some buried treasure. Andrew, what's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about?
I've been trying to get caught up on movies I think have a chance for awards contention this year.
Nice.
So a movie I checked out and had an interesting time with was the Tom Hanks and Robin Wright film Here.
Mm-hmm.
I found it to be an impressively made film. The idea of shooting a film from a single camera angle with changing vignettes inside the aspect ratio showing different points in time was executed brilliantly, I think. The de-aging effects on the cast was incredible. There were several points in the film where I was looking at Tom Hanks going, that's Joe versus a volcano Tom Hanks right there. Mm-hmm. That is a very, very young looking Tom Hanks, and it looks so good. I don't think anybody in this film is giving an outstanding performance that will drum up awards buzz. I actually thought Paul Bettany was a little over the top the entire film.
He's actually kind of terrible in this movie. It's the worst part of the movie, in my opinion.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, you've seen everything at this point now. I should not be surprised.
My nominations are in, man.
Oh, so you can talk about some things now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you've seen this one. I want your opinions on this film as well, if you don't mind, when I'm done.
Sure, yeah.
I would say that at least half of the cast was acting like they were in a stage play, and the other half was acting like they were in a film.
Mm.
And it's two very different ways you go about giving a performance. If the film does get any critical acclaim, I think that it's going to be on the technical side of filmmaking. Not only did I find the performances to be serviceable at best, I also found the story to be kind of mild. And you're probably asking yourself, Andrew, why are you giving this movie so many negative remarks whenever you're recommending it as your buried treasure? Well, I think that visually, this is an impressively made film. I think it's an incredibly made, visually impressive. Robert Zemeckis is the one who directed this, so you know that you're going to be in for something impressive technically with his films. So overall, I would say that I had a good enough time to where I could recommend this film to somebody who knows somebody. I would recommend this to somebody I know who is a movie lover and would appreciate the artistry on display here.
Yeah, I get everything you're saying. This is widely panned. I think it's like 37% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, really?
A lot of my critics friends have given it like 1 star, 1.5 stars. People don't like this movie. I don't think it was that bad. Well, I have to tell you, I completely disagree. This movie worked for me, and it's one of those instances where I just feel at odds with most of the critical community, which happens occasionally, and I actually kind of love, because it makes me feel like an element of life, you know, when it's
You're
like,
bad
oh,
boy.
I have my own opinions. Like, yeah. I'm not just going along with everybody. It's one of the reasons I really try as hard as possible not to know what other critics think of stuff until I see it. But I liked it. In fact, I close to loved it. For me, I think having a locked off place in space adds this element of depth and poignancy where it's like you get a sense for the scope of humanity at its like most intimate, you know, like there's a real voyeurism to it, just being in the same perspective the entire movie that feels really intimate to what's going on. And yet it also feels really expansive and broad. And you see the idea of humanity in that movie to me felt so big and also so small. And I think that's really hard to do, the nuance of capturing that truth, which is that I think our lives can be both so big and so valuable and also so small and so insignificant. I think both of those things have to be wrestled with. And I hadn't seen anything like it. And I really locked in to what I felt it was saying about what it means to be a human being, what it means to experience life and all of its joy and sadness and traumas and trials and celebrations and invented lazy boy chairs and all of it. Like, you know, there's
relaxy boy,
relaxy boy chairs.
I think the concept of seeing generations pass through a house could have been done a little bit neater and tighter. That's my one retort to what you've been saying. Mm-hmm. I get the idea of showing what miraculous things can take place in a single spot on Earth throughout time. I think that's beautiful. And I think that, you know, seeing the lives of not only our main cast is important, but how am I trying to say this? It didn't seem to add much to my viewing experience getting multiple, not generations, but like unaffiliated. Like the relaxy boy guy was cool. I don't see how it adds to the Tom Hanks story beyond looking all the miraculous things that can take place in one spot in on Earth.
I didn't at any point in this movie think that this was a story about only Tom Hanks or only Tom Hanks' family. And maybe that's part of the perspective I had, is they are one of the central pieces of existence in this home, and they bookend our understanding of their story. You know, his story as a human being, I think if there is a main character, they're the main characters. He and Robin Wright Penn are the main characters.
50-60% of this movie.
Yes, absolutely. Somewhere around that amount. But for me, that wasn't the point. The point wasn't what happened to Tom Hanks. The point was, what does it mean to be human? And Tom Hanks and Robin Wright Penn have a lot of examples of, you know, humanity in their story, but they aren't the expanse of humanity. And if we tightened it up to just that family, I think the movie loses a lot, at least loses a lot for me, because there's just something about the understanding of culture and time and different environments and different families that I think has to be in here for it to make the point that I think it wants to make and that I think it's making. I understand what you're saying, but I also think the fact that we're not dealing with a linear narrative is also a pro, not a con in this case for me. The confusion, I think, is a pro, not a con. So also
he died of influenza. I don't know why that just popped into my head, but that had me rolling.
That was great. I get that people don't like this. I think part of the reason I enjoy it so much is, you know, Zemeckis is a big softy, and I kind of am in the same way where it's just like I'm willing to give myself to these big grand syrupy ideas sometimes, and I think Zemeckis is the same way. And so it worked, I vibed with it and had a good time with it, so
yeah.
I will be in the minority on that, although it sounds like you thought it was fine too.
I'm recommending it to people who appreciate filmmaking. It's just that the acting was a little mild, the story I think could have been a little bit tighter, but I think on a technical level this is an incredibly impressive film.
Yeah,
and maybe it's one of those where people, if they get a second viewing on it, they might appreciate it more. But I'm with you. I think that this is a good movie. It's just not a great movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's close to great for me. I really did enjoy it that much.
Nice.
But that is here. I think. I don't think you'll be able to find that in theaters right now. You'll have to wait till it's. I don't think it's out on VOD unless it just came out on VOD recently.
What's your buried treasure, my friend?
I mentioned that my nominations are in for Critics' Choice, Critics' Choice Awards, January 12th, live on E! And then on the Peacock streaming service the next day, in case you want to know where to check out the Critics' Choice Awards. Once I get my nominations in, I catch up on some television because it has been over 2 months since I have watched any TV, and I managed to binge the second season of Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. This is Harrison Ford,
yes,
Jason Segel, and many, many others. I think this is one of the best written comedies on TV right now that you can see, best written episodic comedies there is. I laugh so much during this. I think that is due both to the writing and to the performances. I don't know where everybody stands on Jason's comedic timing, but I just think it's superb. And I think Harrison Ford fits into this cast in a surprisingly agile way comedically. So, yeah, I have a blast with this show. And season two is just as funny, meaningful, interesting, compelling as season one was. And that's very good news for me because I really enjoy this show. So I wanted to give a shout out to Shrinking Season 2, which is out on Apple TV Plus now.
You have praised this show emphatically. My brother-in-law and sister have praised the show emphatically. I might just have to pick this one up.
Yeah, give it a shot. See what you think.
I'm very hesitant picking up new shows, you know, just because it's an undertaking. It's not like a movie. But I've heard too many good things to let this one pass me by. So I think I might pick this one up.
Yeah, I have to be very careful about it, too, because I know my completist tendencies. Mm-hmm. And so if it's a show that's been on a few seasons, I know I've got some, you know, some work to do.
Yeah.
And anytime you pick up a show, you don't know how much future work you have to do. since I'm watching the show, I'm going to watch it forever because that's just the kind of person I am. There have been very few shows, looking at you, Walking Dead, that I've stopped without finishing them off. So
I did the same thing.
All right, there's your buried treasure here. Still in limited release, but probably VOD is going to be your best bet on that one. And then Apple TV Plus has Shrinking Season 2. Well, let's get into our first review. Let's do the big dig. Let's talk about Kraven the Hunter.
My son, we are hunters. The greatest the world has ever known.
Охотник до сказки.
I heard the noise of thunder.
Are you like your father, a gangster? A killer?
Kraven Kravenoff's complete complex relationship with his ruthless gangster father Nikolai starts him down a path of vengeance with brutal consequences, motivating him to become not only the greatest hunter in the world, but also one of the most feared.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Kraven is a Marvel character in the Spider-Man universe, therefore Sony owns the rights to this. And they're trying to do some spidey stuff. They've been so successful so far with the likes of Madam Web and Morbius. And now Kraven the Hunter. Does it follow in the footsteps of those instant classics? Andrew Ormsby, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was it just okay?
Of course I didn't like it. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'll even tip into hated it. You know, maybe maybe we'll go and be nice and say high side of hated it, but this is a terrible movie, Andrew. Oh, this movie is so bad.
It's really bad.
How do they keep doing this? How do they keep making movies this bad?
I don't know, because Sony used to make good movies. They have a track record of making good movies. I just don't know what's going on with their Spider-Man IP right now. It's as if they are purposely making bad movies at this point.
Look, of the six now, if you include the three Venom movies, right? Okay. Three Venom movies, Madam Web, Morbius, and then, you know, this one.
Yeah.
There's only one, I think, inarguably great or good movie in that bunch, and that's the first Venom.
First Venom movie,
In my opinion. That's an arguably good movie. The second Venom is fun, but it's not a good movie, and it's, you know, it's fun because Andy Serkis knows how to make a fun movie, you know, but the content isn't great. And the third Venom's kind of terrible, and we know those other movies are terrible, so it's just like, how do they keep doing this? Well, since you love the movie, since it's, you know, obviously your favorite movie of the year, you get to go first, so give us some general thoughts on this Cravenous Hunter.
Unpopular opinion coming up. I think Russell Crowe is the only one having fun in this movie. I think that his mustache twirly evil thing works for the tone that this movie should have had. I think that if everybody in the cast would have adopted his, I'm not saying everybody has to be evil Russian oligarch, you know, take sons on hunting trip, make them men. You know, that's not what I need from every single person, but I think that he understood the type of character he needed to be. Everybody else is taking this way too seriously.
All right, let's talk about this, because I think I disagree. I hadn't really thought about this point.
Like I said, it's an unpopular opinion, and I knew it was coming up.
You think the actor playing Rhino is taking this too seriously?
I think Alejandro Nivola is his name. Just doesn't work at all. I think he is.
No, I don't think it works, but I don't think it doesn't work because he's taking it too seriously. He is chewing scenery with that part. Like, do you understand what I'm saying?
Okay, so I think that, okay, now I think I see what you're saying.
Okay,
that
okay.
He's over the top, just like Russell Crowe is over the top. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yeah. Russell Crowe's just a great actor.
Yeah.
So he can pull it off.
Yeah, maybe but I think that you look at Aaron Taylor Johnson, and I think that he is, obviously he got in an incredible shape for this. He's, you know, he looks the part. I'm not saying he doesn't look the part, but I'm saying I'm watching him on screen, and I don't see any charisma from him. I just see a very wooden guy. And if he's supposed to be my protagonist, somebody that I connect with, I don't see anything in this character that draws me to root for him.
And so many of the like one-liners that he's supposed to deliver just fall completely flat because he's playing the rest of the movie so serious with so much gravitas that when he like tries to smirk and say a funny, it's just not funny. It just doesn't work.
We need the Aaron Taylor Johnson from Kick-Ass.
Sure.
Not like, you know, the kid. I mean, we need the energy, you know, we need the Aaron Taylor Johnson from Bullet Train, you know, somebody who's, is a character, you know, somebody who's fully fleshed out, who's not just, I hate to say this, he's just a piece of meat for people to look at in this movie and go, damn, that's a cut guy. You know, he looks really good, but there's no energy. There's no life behind this performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, I agree. Yep.
So I don't have anything really positive to say beyond that. The CGI is there. It's rushed. That's what I forgot. That's what I say from now on. CGI looks rushed. I don't say rushed. It looks bad.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
What about you? You hate this movie.
The CGI looks really, really rushed. You know, very, very rushed. Yes, very rushed CGI. I think this movie feels like a pull it out of the hat movie. where they just threw a bunch of characters into a hat and then pulled some out and were like, okay, these are the characters. And then they threw a bunch of superhero powers into the hat and then just pulled those out and like, okay, let's assign these crazy superpowers. And then let's try to write the most boring story we can around this random collection of superpowers and characters that are never explained. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm just going like, who is this, like the Christopher Abbott character that, you know, counts and hypnotizes people? Like, why, where, when, how? I don't know. Does it matter? No, he's just shown to be supremely evil from the very beginning, and so therefore we're gonna jump for joy and celebrate when he's finally dispatched. And it's like, are we? I don't know how to care about any of these people. Like, it feels that way with so many of the characters.
Do you know how you feel sometimes, and I'm not saying this happens every single time, but sometimes mm-hmm. whenever you go into a movie and it's a superhero movie and I have to like explain things yes. to you because yes. I'm like, okay, so
you've
this
read the
is
comics.
What this, I've yeah. read the comics. This is one of the very few instances where I'm coming out of a movie going, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know what their powers are or if how they connect to the, I barely know anything about Kraven the Hunter.
Okay.
So all the,
so people you're no are, help.
I'm no help. And all the people that are like adjacent to him, you know, that are, you know, like Marvel characters. I don't know any of them. The only time I've ever come across Kraven the Hunter was in a Deadpool comic. So I know nothing about this guy.
Okay.
So I was hoping that the movie would be like, here's his origin story. Here's like, which they did kind of give us. We got an origin story for this character. I'm not saying it's good, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But then the movie just starts jumping around from character to character, and I don't get any backstory. Like you talked about the foreigner guy mm-hmm. who counts and talks. I have no basis for this guy or why he's in the movie or how he's connected to Kraven the Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
None of yeah. this. So I felt just as lost as you did in this.
You know, we've got the younger brother and mm-hmm. the completely unearned journey that character is on, and just the absolute weirdness of what happens with that character that is just not seated in any really meaningful or important way.
We're talking about the character shift at the end of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it makes no sense at all.
No sense at all. Yeah. The Calypso character, severely underwritten. Like, you have to do the math to even know it's the same person for a bunch of this movie. And then, like, then they'll say, because, okay, I was a little confused. Maybe this is just me. Maybe this was, you know, some people understand this, but he has somebody flying him in the first mission we see to the prison.
Yeah.
Like the very first cold open. Hey, we better show you some cool stuff because it's going to get real boring here for a while. scene. And then just not actually showing any cool stuff. Just, you know, a lot of punchy. Yeah. So there was somebody flying him that we never see their face. We never see who they are. Is that that can't be Calypso because he meets her later.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So do we know who that is? Did I just miss who that is?
Yeah, it's never brought up again.
So there's okay. Then I don't feel like I've lost my mind. I just feel like the movie's lost its mind. Like
that's the logic you should always follow with this movie. That it's the movie's fault. Trust me.
Well, it's shot in such a way that you're like, oh, this character is going to be revealed later. The person that's helping them out, you know, because superheroes have their
post-credit scene. They turn around and you're like,
whatever.
Oh,
like, I mean, superheroes have their guy in chair, right? You know, we know yeah. this and this. Oh, okay. This is the guy in chair. Can't wait to find out who it is. Nah, never that person again. In fact, Calypso becomes a guy in chair. Although again, very, very sparsely, we don't really understand why they are, you know, so compelled to work together. You know, the backstory ties them together kind of, but they never even talked. Like, there's something, I'm sorry. I just, things keep popping into my head. There's this thing that happens in that opening backstory where we are shown four times, like they pounded into our head that like, oh, this potion, the lion's blood, got mixed into this potion and dripped into his wound. And wait, were we clear on that? Let's show you a drop of lion's blood go into this same wound again. Still didn't get it? Okay, how about we make sure you see that the lion's blood is going into this wound? Fine. The lion's blood goes into the wound. Why does that matter? What is the distinction between the potion and the mixing of the blood and like him being, is he a special kind of person that this potion works on him? It's all just ephemeral nonsense. It's all just like, none of it is explained. None of it makes any kind of sense. You don't have to explain everything, but give me a sense for at least why this guy? Why Kraven the Hunter? You know, something beyond a deck of tarot cards saying somebody important will need help today. Like, okay, you know, it's just, this movie is just a big fortune cookie nonsense mess of nothing with everything that it's doing. And it just, after a while, it just gets really annoying because I want something to hang my hat on. And I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Luckily, I was having fun with Russell Crowe. That's the only thing that kept me from hating this movie.
Yeah. So you don't know a lot about this.
Not much.
This character or these characters, but can you tell me, is Rhino supposed to be the same Paul Giamatti?
Yeah, that's the same Rhino character. It's just a different interpretation of the character.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yes, a very different interpretation. So
I think this one, if I'm remembering correctly, I think this one is actually closer to the comic book accurate version than the Paul Giamatti one.
Well, let me just apologize in hindsight and in foresight that there may be occasional spoiling going on here of just kind of beats that happen in the story, just because when I go on rants, things pop into my brain to say about stuff that happens. So
but this movie doesn't matter.
There is an element on Sif Pop that you've heard before of like, when a movie's bad, we kind of don't mind spoiling it quite as much. Because honestly, hoping you don't spend money to see it, you know, don't give Sony the wrong message here. That's right. But can you tell me why a something kind of medicine intravenously hooked up through a port in the stomach that keeps somebody from developing hardened skin, right? Like the idea of impenetrable skin would also keep them from developing rhinoceros horns on their head? Like, at what point does the body go, oh, it's not just about the dermis. I need this person to look like a rhinoceros. Like, I'm going to grow horns. Like, it's just, this is the kind of stuff that just, when a bad movie happens, just gets under my skin, and I'm just like, just make one part of this movie make sense. Just one thing. And I'm sure there's something in there somewhere. It's just hard to find it. So, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
I don't think it's there.
There's another unearned character moment with Calypso. There's like one Chekhov's crossbow moment, and then all of a sudden there's a, you know, Deus Ex crossbow moment. And that's supposed to be enough, and it isn't. And it's just like, this movie's just full of shortcuts and stuff that just isn't earned. And man, at the end of the day, it's just a frustrating watch to watch something like this. It's not even a pretty movie, Andrew. It's not even pretty to look at.
Nope.
All right. Let's do one last thing. Andrew, do you have anything else you want to mention about this film?
There is something positive to say about this movie. There is no post credits.
It ends when the credits start.
It ends when the credits start. You can leave.
My one last thing that I'll bring up, I think, is worth talking about is the fact that they made this rated R. And it was interesting to me because there's nothing about this movie, in my opinion, that they had to. Like, you just lighten up on some of those kills a little bit and drop two F-words maybe, and you probably get a PG-13. But I think it was because they wanted it to be brutal. And I have to tell you,
it wasn't.
It's not, right? Like, when you've seen John Wick or, you know, what other movies are doing with the brutality of violence, and again, I'm not advocating for movies to be more violent. I'm just saying, when you've seen the type of moments that are in, like, you know, other movies. This stuff is positively tame. And honestly,
I think Venom biting somebody's head off is a lot more brutal than anything you see in this movie.
I was just going to say, honestly, I've kind of seen some stuff like this in PG-13 movies. So
yeah.
It's a baffling choice to me to maintain an R rating, but to neuter it anyway. I don't know. It's weird. I don't understand what this movie's doing, what the audience is supposed to be. I think
they were trying to go for the Logan Deadpool effect of, ooh, we made it rated R. Maybe that'll draw in a more mature mm-hmm. crowd to enjoy this movie. But no.
Well, there you go. That is Kraven the Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By the way, his first name's Sergey, not Kraven Kravenoff.
Kraven Kravenoff. That's what the official plot synopsis. Kraven Kravenoff.
Is it really say Kraven? Yeah. Well,
yes.
Who cares?
That's funny. Yes. So Sony continues the perfect record with these movies. Way to go! This is the kind of perfection we all hope for.
Yep.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All right, let's hit into the best ever challenge this week. Let's talk about movies with the word hunt or variations thereof in the title that are worth watching. Andrew, let's nominate some. Let's do four each since it's just the two of us.
Okay.
Why don't you begin? What's your first nomination?
Well, real quick, I'm trying to see which movie I have higher in my greatest movies of all time. Oh, there we go. So now I know. I'm going to go with a 2012 Danish film starring Mads Mikkelsen called The Hunt.
Yep, I knew you were.
This is a brutal movie, but it is so good. It's about a man, a teacher played by Mads Mikkelsen, who is wrongfully accused of sexually assaulting one of his students, like a third or fourth grader. And like I said, he's falsely accused, but no matter how much proof there is of his innocence, people continue to persecute and, just treat him awfully just because of this false rumor. And, he gives a great performance. I think that it's shot beautifully. The tone, the time of year, it being winter and cold, just kind of adds to the uncomfortableness that you feel in this movie. I think it's a brilliant film. Have you seen it, Aaron?
I was trying to think. I'm almost sure I have, but it was probably 12 years ago.
Okay.
And it was probably in a rush of a ton of awards movies at the end of the year.
Mm.
So I need to revisit it, but I vaguely remember it. I do know Thomas Vinterberg also did Another Round with Mads Mikkelsen, which is one of my favorites in 2020.
Oh, yes. That's the
drinking movie.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way to say it.
Yeah.
That's the Mads Mikkelsen drinking movie. And I highly recommend that one as well. So yeah, I should go back and make sure that I've seen The Hunt. But yeah, I knew you were good. You've talked about loving it before, so I knew you were going to bring it up.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to throw Hunt for the Red October on there. Just get it on the list right away. We've talked about it many times. Andrew has seen it. and we love it. So there you go. Hunt for the Red October.
That was during our, COVID, run mm-hmm. where we were checking movies off of our list of shame and you recommended that one for me. So thank you again for that.
What's your next nominee?
I'm going to go with Good Will Hunting.
Yep.
This is the movie that I wasn't sure which I had higher on my best ever movie list. Matt Damon, Robin Williams, It's Not Your Fault. Everybody knows it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you definitely check it out. It's worth, I don't know what you, would you recommend this movie to everybody or?
Well, no, but I wouldn't recommend any R-rated movie to everybody. There's a subsection of people in my world and also children, you know, that, you know, just,
I just don't know kids. That's my thing. I don't know kids. I only know adults.
But I would say, if you're the kind of person who, is not opposed to a rated R film, it is definitely a movie that you will find some depth and meaning in and beauty in. There was a recent SNL parody of this. I don't know if you saw it. Mm-mm. But it basically, one of the characters is a janitor.
Yeah, I did see that.
And Robin Williams was apparently living in the closet and comes out and just, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. So, yeah, you can check that out. And if you want to go a few years before that, check out the SNL parody of Dead Poets Society. Speaking of Robin Williams parodies.
Where they step on the table.
Yeah, yeah. So they do the Oh Captain, My Captain with different consequences.
Yeah.
So, yes, Good Will Hunting absolutely has to be on this list. Okay. I can find another one to nominate. I really can.
I forgot to ask, are we going 5 nominations or 4?
4. Okay. I'm going to run out, I think, if we try to go for 5. Maybe not. We'll see. I'm already running out. But I'm going to put another The Hunt on there. This one from 2020. This is a satirical film about politics and polarization and came out at the perfect time and unfortunately still is the perfect time for us to understand how polarization impacts our view of others and humanity. The Hunt is gory and bloody and violent and over the top, and all that's on purpose because it's satirical and it's making a point.
You know, I think the first time we watched this movie and we did a review, I didn't really appreciate it. But going back in my head and like thinking over the movie, I think if I gave it a second shot, maybe I just wasn't in the mood for, like, we were living in such a polarizing time. We still are. Mm-hmm. But at that time when it came out, everything was just so polarizing that I wanted an escape. And this was a movie that was like, no, we're not escaping. We're talking about it, and we're talking about it hard. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, dramatized, yeah. But I was just in the moment, I'm like, I just, not right now, please.
Yeah. So, The Hunt 2020 will be my next nomination. All right, what do you got next?
I'm going to go with the movie that I remember watching like weekly when I was a kid, and that's Mouse Hunt.
And you are just stealing all my choices.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
I'm gonna try to get to four. I think I can get to 4. No, that's good. I'm glad we're on the same page on this movie. It's hilarious.
This movie is one of the, like, I don't know if it was just like I was the perfect age when this came out. It's one of the funniest movies ever for me. Just like Nathan Lane and Lee Evans together are just comedic geniuses. This is very slapstick, you know, injury comedy that you would find from the early 90s. When did this come out? 96, 95, somewhere around there?
I'd have to look to be sure, but that feels about right, yeah.
You have a great cameo by Christopher Walken in this movie. It's Gore Verbinski, who we know from like Rango and Pirates of the Caribbean. This is just a great movie.
Yeah, I agree. It's just funny. It's just one of those quick, funny lightning watches where you just like laugh through it. And if somebody hasn't seen it, it's a fun one to put on and just watch and laugh together. Like, there are just some good comedies out there, man. And that's, I hate that comedies are so underrated as movies, as quality films, because it takes a lot of talent to make a really funny movie, and this is a really funny movie. Nathan Lane is kind of underrated. I mean, there's a real discussion to be had about his impact on the success of The Lion King, honestly. Like, that performance is astonishing. Yeah. I think of The Birdcage, him and Robin Williams together. He's a really funny dude.
I love him in The Producers as well.
Producers, of course. Yeah. So, check out Mouse Hunt if you want to see some more funny stuff. See if it's in your lane.
So do you have anything left that you can nominate?
I do. Of course I do. Hunt for the Wilder People.
Dang it.
Now I'm stealing from you.
Yeah. Go ahead. Great movie.
Yeah. Now, I think you actually like this movie more than me, so I should probably let you talk about it more. But as I was looking through the movies that have the word hunt in them, mm-hmm. and by the way, it's not like there aren't a bunch. There are a bunch. There's just a lot of bad ones, you know. But Hunt for the Wilder People is good. And it's, for me, it's the quirkiness and the Taika Waititi of it all that, you know, really brings me to it. The actual story, technical prowess, those kind of things are a little bit lacking in this movie, in my opinion, but it's still mm-hmm. a really fun, quirky watch. But why don't you talk about it a little bit more?
I think that it's just a charming, heartfelt movie. I think that Sam Neill, this is a role I've never seen him in before. Mm-hmm. So to see him be, you know, this whimsical, never wanted to be a dad, but taking on the responsibility. Also, Julian Dennison, who plays the kid, this was my first introduction to him. I know a lot of people met him for the first time in a Deadpool 2, but I think that he's great in this. It's just a charming, heartfelt movie. Taika Waititi, I think this was the first Taika Waititi movie I'd ever seen. We Do in the Shadows maybe was probably the first that I'd seen. Mm. But this was great.
Yeah. I agree. That's why I stole it from you. Nice. All right, you able to find your fourth?
Oh yeah, I had some more.
And not steal the only one I have left?
Probably. Is it an incredibly depressing movie that's over 3 hours long?
Just say it.
The Deer Hunter.
I actually was hoping not to have to nominate The Deer Hunter, so that's fine that you can take that one. I don't like The Deer Hunter as much as most people, and it has a little bit to do with that depressing part. But
it's such a dark movie. It's such a dark movie.
There's so little hope in that movie that it's hard for, you know, Mr. Sunshine and Rainbows over here to really wholeheartedly endorse it.
Yeah, and I totally get it. I think that everybody's giving a great performance in this movie, especially Christopher Walken. Mike Cimino is the one who directed this. I'm trying to think of other movies that he's done that I would know. Looking on his IMDb, this is the only one. Oh, he did a. Did he do Platoon as well? No, he did not. That was Oliver Stone. He did something with Platoon. Anyway, it's just really dark, and I can understand why that doesn't work for some people. I definitely have to be in the mood for it.
Yes, you can be aware of the technical prowess on display, and at the same time go, not a movie for me. This is not a movie for me. That's okay. This also isn't necessarily a movie for me, but I had it down just in case I needed it, and I need it, and I like it more than most. I think it has around a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, so at least some critics said it was okay. It has a cast that is hard to mess up. I am going with the first Snow White and the Huntsman for my final nomination. I actually enjoy this movie. Again, like I said, hard to go wrong when you've got Charlize, Chris Hemsworth, Kristen Stewart. Like, those are high quality performances. And honestly, Charlize as the Evil Queen makes this movie. I think she's, you know, she has several movies in her career that she just saves. I think this is one of them. She is so good in this movie, in my opinion. So, yes, not the second one. The second one's kind of trash, but this one I think is worth a watch.
Aaron, I totally agree.
Yay!
I actually like this movie.
There you have it.
And I
the
think
official
that
the official SIFPOP best ever hunting movie, Snow White and the Huntsman.
Oh, man. No, I think that Charlize is great, and then the Florence and the Machine soundtrack is great too.
Yeah, that's too. I didn't even mention that. All right, where do we want to land on this? I don't remember The Hunt enough really to, you know, full-throatedly endorse that. So I think we're probably looking at Good Will Hunting or Hunt for Red October, one of those two. What are your thoughts?
Man.
I mean, we could surprise everybody and go with Mouse Hunt, you know.
Good. Just like, for everybody who has never seen it, they'd be like, yeah, what is this movie?
Are we willing to sit here and say that Mouse Hunt is a better movie than Good Will Hunting?
Yeah. I don't know if I can do that. My heart is actually, even though I have Good Will Hunting higher, part of me is like, yeah, but Hunt for Red October. So I'm kind of torn right now, leaning a little bit towards Good Will Hunting, though.
I am also leaning a little bit towards Good Will Hunting. So let's go okay. that direction. Very, very slightly. But I think mm-hmm. like you put Good Will Hunting and Hunt for Red October and ask which is the better movie. I think Good Will Hunting is technically the better movie yeah. as I would define it. So, so yeah, I think the actual best ever hunting movie will go to Good Will Hunting. So there nice. You go. All right, let's finish it off with another review. Let's talk a little bit for our final artifact. Let's talk about Emilia Perez.
So, does your client have a name?
He desires to remain anonymous. If you're not willing to accept, I don't think it's worth talking. Just cut to the chase. To listen is to accept.
Rita, an underrated lawyer working for a large law firm more interested in getting criminals out of jail than bringing them to justice, is hired by the leader of a criminal organization. And that's all the plot you're going to get. As mentioned, this is on Netflix. It is their big push for awards this year. Critics' Choice nominations just came out, and I believe it is either second or third most time. I think it had 10 nominations. What did you think, Andrew, of Emilia Perez? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I did not like it.
Mm,
I know.
But Andrew, it's an awards movie. Must be amazing. It has to be awesome. We both have to love it. How come we both are in don't like it?
What?
I know, right?
What? I'm wondering if you have the same, it's possible you have the same critiques that I do.
I mean, it's, look, okay. For you to mess up a musical for me is a big deal. Like that's already a huge plus in your corner when I'm going into a movie. And I think I probably did like this a little bit more than you. In fact, I probably would put it just okay. I'd probably say it's just okay. There's enough in here for me to bring it up out of didn't like it, now that I think about it a little bit more. And part of that is the first 20 to 30 minutes. I think the music is really good. I think some of these songs are really fun, especially, again, in that first half hour or so. I think some of the music after that is actually not good, which is tough to say. There's also something I want to be very aware of, and I'll just say here from my own, you know, perspective, when music is in a different language, it's harder for the subtitles to actually convey the beauty of the lyricism.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
When a musical is in English and you speak English, you get a sense for like plays on words, rhyme schemes. Oh, that's an interesting two words that you rhyme together. Oh, that's an interesting flow of that sentence.
Yeah.
Whereas when it's in Spanish and I'm just reading subtitles, I'm not feeling that flow. I'm not hearing the nuances, the cultural nuances that may be in the lyrics. They may or may not be there. The point is, I don't know. And so I want to be very clear that my lack of cultural understanding, and more specifically language understanding, has an impact on my ability to really enjoy this movie to its fullest. I think it's really important for me to say that.
Totally.
Having said that, even without understanding the words, some of the words as they were spoken, I loved some of the first songs that were in this this movie. So there is some music that I really enjoyed. I think Selena Gomez is amazing. I think she basically can do no wrong, in my opinion. I think she's incredible here. I didn't feel that way necessarily about any of the other performances, which is, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I know there's a lot of capital A acting going on. It just didn't often work for me. So, yeah, in general, it was just kind of like, every 20 minutes or so, there'd be a moment where I'd be like, oh, that's really good. I really like that. And then there'd be another like 10 to 15 minutes where I'd be like, I'm just not connecting to this. I just don't understand what we're doing during this time. And then overall, thematically, like there were some some real places where it felt like the movie didn't even understand its characters. And that felt rough to me, where it was like that just doesn't feel like how that character would react or what that character would do in that position or in that moment. That's not for me to say. That's for the scriptwriter to say. But it is for me to notice, in my opinion, inconsistencies. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. Some general thoughts from you, Andrew.
This could be a pro and a con for the movie. This movie goes for it. And what I mean by that is it goes for everything. Mm-hmm. It wants to be a musical. It goes for that with energy. It wants to be a movie about self-discovery and actualization. It goes for that with passion. It wants to be a movie about the horrors inflicted about the innocent that are affected by the cartels. It's brave for doing so. Here's my problem. Pick a thing. This film has so much energy and passion. You know what? It reminds me of my pit bulls. Full of energy and love, but also just like my pit bulls, easily distracted, messy, and unfocused. I feel that if this movie had picked one or two of the 18 different things that it tries to be, it could have been a more focused, and I would have considered it an awards contender in my book. But as it stands, I felt it was just too much. Plus, I don't like musicals.
This is one.
Oh, and maybe you disagree with me on this front, but I've seen enough musicals, even though I don't like them, I've seen enough musicals to where I think I can critique them beyond my own biases. I think that there are moments in a movie for music and moments not for music. And I think that there were times in this movie more than enough to where it became a common occurrence to where I'm bringing it up, that songs would just pop out of nowhere. Not like they normally do in a musical. Songs obviously just pop out of nowhere. But it's like this moment doesn't feel right for a song right now. This feels more like a moment for actual dialogue to help progress the story.
Yeah.
Did you feel that at all during this movie?
Yes. Maybe I would. I don't know that I'd verbalize it exactly the same. The key word that you mentioned that I also agree with is the word messy. I do think the movie is very, it feels unfinished in some ways. It feels like there just needs a little more focus to really finish up what it's trying to do. And what it's trying to do, I think, is beautiful and powerful. And I love the idea of extreme self-actualization. That's an interesting thing to think about, especially in the terms that this movie is giving us. And the idea of what if the real me is so different than the me I find myself to be. In this movie, that deals with transgender, it deals with criminality, like it deals with all these big things. But it is beyond that something that I think all of us can identify as we've all gone through different types of self-actualization and understanding. Wait, am I really who I appear to be today on the outside? And I think if it had really, really found a way to make that the driving force of the movie, I think it could have worked. But again, I don't know that it always understands its character motivations in a way that drive the plot in a way that makes sense. So it just feels messy. It just feels like, so when you say, you know, songs are appearing at points where songs shouldn't be, to me, that's part of the messiness. The messiness is we think this is a big emotional moment thing to sing about, but the emotion is a different kind of emotion here than in the movie. Maybe this is a place for, you know, more dramatic conversation or dialogue or whatever, like you were saying. And I just think overall it's frustratingly messy. I'm telling you, there are 5 minute, 10 minute stretches in this movie where it is firing on all cylinders, and I am digging it. But it only happens every quarter hour or so. You know what I mean? Like, it just it just feels like the movie rambles
every
around.
15 minutes, I'm rearing up for a good moment, but after
yeah. Well, just it feels like the movie is rambling around trying to find something, and then it finds it, and then it loses it, and tries to ramble around and find it again. Yes. Oh, there it is, you know. And it just feels messy. It's interesting. I wasn't expecting necessarily you to have the same experience I did, but it sounds like at least you had a similar one.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think anybody's given a bad performance in this movie. I'm not up on Selena Gomez as you are, but she's serviceable, I think.
I thought she was great. I really thought she was the highlight of the movie.
I think that Carla Sofia Gascon, mm-hmm. however you say it, who plays Amelia, I think that her performance is the one that really was captivated by.
Well, but, you can tell it's so personal to her and so important to her, and as something, you know, that she's experienced in at least partially in her own life. I wonder how difficult the first part of that movie was for her. You know what I mean?
Was like, that her in prosthetics?
I think it was.
I think it was too. That's why I think it's a great performance, because it's almost unrecognizable.
So I think it's a great performance, and one worth talking about, one worth lauding, one worth thinking about, one worth putting on a pedestal. So yeah.
Mm, yeah. I just saw this movie, so it's fresh in my mind, so I'm like scrambling to find something to critique, but mm-hmm. I'm not finding much. I think all my critiques are giant broad ones that I've already said. I don't have any like minute critiques. So
yeah, yeah. I just think this movie, I think its eyes are bigger than its stomach. That's a weird thing to say about a movie, but like, I think it's trying to do, so much and, doesn't realize, how it's falling short in so many areas because of that.
Mm.
So, yeah, I will say, after I started looking at reviews after this, came out, we're not alone on this. It's a pretty mixed overall bag. Despite its nominations, you know, like I said, from Critics Choice or whatever, a lot of my critics friends also found it to be, messy. So yeah. Yeah. And there's some real interesting discussion on it. I highly encourage you to look up, some of the discussion on it from the trans community. Their voices are the ones, to hear on a lot of the trans issue stuff in the movie, because there's some mixed opinions in the trans community about how this movie deals with transness and those kind of things. So it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. I actually like the conversations that it actually brings up. Mm-hmm. I know some people that can be scary to actually have those conversations, but I think that it's, if I'm going to give the movie credit for anything, it's definitely going to be a conversation starter.
Yep. Do you have anything else? Any final thoughts on Amelia Perez? No, there is no post-credit scene. Well, there you go. That is Amelia Perez. It is available on Netflix if you want to check it out. Well, we did it, Andrew. Woo! We did a podcast.
Yeah, we did.
Congratulations to all involved. We shall hang a lion's mane on your neck and call you Craven the Podcaster. Well done. Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check all that out at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can also email us feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than finding something that Selena Gomez isn't good at. We will be back next week. Yes, we've got one more next week before we take Christmas break. So we'll be back with probably Mufasa, I would guess, and maybe Sonic. See if we can get two movies in the theater.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. But either way, we'll see you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.